The other one was made of ectoplasm, and she handed it to my father, who always sat next to the cabinet, and asked him to pass it round the sitters. We were all bubbling with excitement but did not allow this to overcome our usual investigative outlook. We carefully felt the texture and generally agreed that it felt very similar to the wing feather of a medium-sized bird, 97, quite firm and springy, 97, and was about 3 inches long. I was the last to examine it, at the other end of the circle. I then handed it back to Doris to hand to Auntie, who had been standing in the middle of the room watching us while the feather was being passed around, but instead of Aunt Egg taking it, she simply moved over to the fireplace, picked up one of the jars and asked Doris to drop the feather in. Aunt Egg then picked up the lid from the mantelpiece and screwed it on the jar, apostrophe 97 inches, full view of all the sitters. Aunt Egg stayed for a while chatting, and we thanked her for such a remarkable and enjoyable 12 months. She replied by saying that the spirit helpers, including herself, were all astounded by the amazing progress that had been made in such a short time. They would always be willing to help us with our interesting experiments, but asked us to always remember the original purpose of our home circle, 97, regular meetings with friends and relatives from the spirit world. We assured them that we would never forsake that most important aspect of our sittings. Just before we closed, Sunrise again spoke to us by direct voice and told us we would be able to cut a piece from Aunt Egg's robes within the next few weeks, for which we thanked him very much. More information about the two feathers: A. The Aport feather, 97, which had been placed on the mantel shelf by Aunt Egg. This was about 5 inches long, bright reddish, 97 orange in color, and much softer than the ectoplasmic feather we had all handled during the sitting. We don't know where it actually came from, but I still have it in my possession. B. The ectoplasmic feather, apostrophe 97 inches, the jar with the lid on. The first thing we noticed was that there was at least 1 inch of liquid in the jar, whereas the other jar had the same shallow covering of the bottom as when we started. The spirit chemists had added more liquid just as Sunrise had intimated before he materialized. The jar was passed round and we all examined the contents closely, 97 especially my mother, who had no idea what had been happening while she had been in deep trance. Sydney had a watch repairer's magnifying eyeglass and we all used it to have an even closer examination of the feather, and I quote from my recorded notes which I made that evening, 97, it was white and looked like plastic, 97 certainly a very different texture from the colored Aport feather on the mantel shelf. Sunrise had told us that it would soon disappear, and in fact we were able to watch that actually happen in front of our eyes during supper. It seemed to gradually melt away into little drops of fluid and run into the bottom of the jar. We removed the lid after about an hour and a quarter. The feather had been put in about 9:00 p.m. and we could smell a kind of bleach, chlorine odor. By 11:30 p.m. the feather had completely gone and only fluid was left in the jar. Mr. Jones took about half the fluid to analyze in his hospital laboratory, 97, anticipating to discover something unusual, 97, but no such thing. He told us the following week that the crystals he obtained from his centrifuge showed nothing unusual and the major constituents were akin to the chemicals used in bleaching agents, 97, as the odor from the jar had indicated. Irrespective of that slight anticlimax to our investigative outlook, we were still delighted to have had the unique opportunity of retaining, even for only a short period, a specimen of ectoplasm after the sitting had closed. And we were keenly anticipating the promised experiment in a few weeks' time. Pieces of ectoplasm cut from Aunt AGG's robes at the close of our 52nd sitting on 26th of April 1947, during which we had received the ectoplasmic feather, Sunrise had promised us that within a few weeks we would have the opportunity of cutting a piece of ectoplasm from Aunt Egg's robes. True to his promise, 3 weeks later, Aunt Egg spoke to Mr. Jones and asked him to have his scissors ready for the following week. Usually Granny Lumsden was the first to materialize each week, but this particular week, 24th May, Aunt Egg came first. She came out from the cabinet, stood in front of Mr. Jones and invited him to cut off a piece of her ectoplasmic robes, which she held up towards him. As he cut off a piece about the size of a small pocket handkerchief, we all saw Aunt Ek cringe a little and heard a slight gasp from my mother behind the cabinet curtain. Being an experiment approved by our spirit helpers, my mother suffered no ill effect, but here again I can only emphasize the importance of such approval in relation to the safety of the medium. Materialization mediums in deep trance place their trust in the hands of the sitters, and their trust is sacrosanct. The piece of ectoplasm was passed around the sitters, and then I placed it on the mantel shelf alongside me. After Aunt Ek went, Sunrise spoke to us and said that they too were experimenting this week and did not expect the ectoplasm to be still there when the circle closed. He asked us not to be too disappointed, however, as we would be able to repeat the experiment next week, when we should have another small jar ready to receive it, 97, as we had done with the ectoplasmic feather. But this time, he said, just provide the empty jar and the spirit chemists would put in some liquid to try to keep the ectoplasm a little longer. After a number of other materializations, we closed at 9:20 p.m. And as expected, when the room lights went on, there was no ectoplasm to be seen. But we were all looking forward to the following week, of course. The following week, 31st May, it happened that we had previously arranged to have two guest visitors, 97, a chartered accountant friend of Sydney's and the matron of a large local hospital who had worked with Mr. Jones for many years. We asked Sunrise if we ought to rearrange their visit, but it was agreed we should go ahead as usual, 97, much to our visitors' delight when we explained to them before we started. We had our usual excellent trumpet voice phenomena, and some flower reports were given to our visitors, including a rose and two carnations. After about half an hour, my mother went into the cabinet and our materialization phenomena followed. Firstly, there was a close nursing colleague from the same hospital as Mr. Jones and the matron, followed by the accountant's mother. In both cases, the visitors were quite certain of the identity of the materialized spirits and were extremely thrilled and happy to be able to meet and talk to them again. Then Aunt Ek came, and after chatting to our visitors in her usual friendly manner, she turned to Mr. Jones to repeat last week's cutting. The piece of ectoplasm was again passed round the sitters, including our visitors, and then I unscrewed the lid of the jar, which had been standing on the mantel shelf all evening, put in the ectoplasm and screwed on the lid. At no other time was the lid not screwed on the jar, but as I put in the ectoplasm I was aware of the same bleach-like odor as the jar with the ectoplasmic feather some 5 weeks earlier. I was also able to see sufficiently in the dim red light that the jar was about one-third full of liquid, 97, again supplied by the spirit chemists as Sunrise had said. Another remarkable report. When the room lights went on at the close of the sitting, the piece of ectoplasm was still there in the liquid in the jar. Again we all examined it very closely, especially my mother of course, and agreed it looked like very, very fine cotton material, with one of the ladies commenting that it reminded her of chiffon, 97, a gossamer-like material. Naturally we were very excited to have been privileged to carry out such a unique experiment, 97, especially in the presence of our two visitors who were so thrilled to have been part of it. By the time we left Sid and Gladys's, the ectoplasm was still in the jar and had dissolved only very slightly, 97, quite different from the ectoplasmic feather, which completely dissolved into the liquid within 2.5 hours. The jar was left on the mantel shelf and the ectoplasm gradually dissolved over the next 4 days, until by the following Wednesday there was only the yellowish liquid with a few minute specks suspended therein. I have never heard of such an experiment being carried out in any other home circle or seance, but would be delighted to hear from any reader who has been as privileged as we were, 97, and who perhaps was able to obtain more scientific information. In the last analysis, it is our conception of death which decides our answers to all the questions that life puts to us. Dag Hammarskjöld, a most unusual apport and birthday gift, one of the most unusual and certainly the largest apport received through my mother's mediumship, occurred not in a home circle sitting, but in my mother's home on her 53rd birthday, 9717 March 1948. Mam and Dad had a fish and chip shop in Middlesbrough and lived behind the shop. The kitchen had a small walk-in type of pantry with no window, only a zinc gauze vent, which was the norm in those days in the Northeast. It was in here that this exceptional apport occurred. Doris and I lived about 10 minutes' drive from the shop, and about 4 o'clock our telephone rang. It was Mam asking me if I could go straight there, as there was something unusual she wanted me to see. As I helped in the shop each morning, I thought it was probably something to do with the business, 97, but nothing more was said, and I left immediately. When I arrived, Mam and Dad were sitting in the kitchen having a cup of tea. Mam usually had a smile on her face, but on this occasion it seemed rather enigmatic. She realized I was keen to see what she had telephoned about and immediately said, "97 just opened the pantry door, son, but be very careful." Naturally, I was very curious and not a little apprehensive, 97, but did exactly as I was asked. I opened it very slowly, but because of the lack of light saw nothing unusual for a moment or two. Then as I opened it wider to step inside, I was halted in my tracks. There at my feet on the floor of the pantry was a mass of lilac blossom, 97, filling the whole floor space and as high as the first shelf, 97, about 3 feet high. I turned and looked at Mam, who, with an even bigger grin, said, "I thought you'd be surprised," an understatement if ever there was. But the explanation was even more surprising. Mam had made the customary pot of tea in the afternoon, got the milk jug out of the pantry, closed the door behind her and sat on her chair adjacent to the door. She then realized that she had forgotten the sugar, turned on her chair and opened the door again, 97, to be confronted by this amazing sight on the pantry floor. One moment earlier, when she got the milk, the floor had been absolutely clear. Now it was packed with lilac blossom. Naturally, they were both dumbfounded, and Mam's first thought was to ring me. I was as amazed as they were. Instinctively, I knew it was not a practical joke. Mam and Dad didn't do those things, and Mam wouldn't bring me back to the shop on a fool's errand. It had certainly happened, as Mam said. There was no doubt about that. A few other instances of individual flower reports had occurred outside the circle room, but usually during the time we were actually sitting. This mass of lilac blossom, however, was quite exceptional, and Mam was clearly nonplussed but very excited. Needless to say, we immediately removed it, made it up into a number of bunches, and I took them round to many of our delighted friends, where they lasted 2 or 3 weeks, 97 as normal. Come the following Saturday evening, Aunt Ag again preempted our question by asking us to tell our minutes, as she always called my mother, that they had been delighted to be able to bring her such a special birthday gift from her many spirit friends who were so close to her. The darkness of the pantry had afforded the ideal conditions, and it was another example of Mam's remarkable mediumship. But for a change, this time she had been the first to witness it. The missing pound note by 1950. Doris and I were living in a terraced house in Oxford Road, Middlesbrough. We then had a family of 5 children with ages ranging from 3 to 9 years, and had little money to spare. Doris, in fact, had become very adept at making a little go a very long way. She always folded the few pound notes individually in her purse and always knew how many she had. When at home, she left her purse on a high shelf on the Welsh dresser in the living room. I came home one evening to find her very upset, because she was fairly certain that a pound note was missing from her purse. She had questioned all the children, and they had assured her that they were not involved. Doubts of all kinds pass through parents' minds at times like this, but we had no reason not to believe them, 97, and left it at that. Naturally, we were still concerned that we had lost about 1/6 of our weekly income, 97, and still rather puzzled. Doris checked and rechecked her spending and was still fairly certain that a pound was missing, 97, but we said nothing to anyone else. Come the following Sunday evening, however, we had a most unexpected and pleasant surprise, 97. Although by now, after 4 years of the remarkable phenomena in our home circle, we should not have been so surprised. But this occasion was slightly different and was not during one of our sittings. Mom and Dad used to visit us for tea most Sundays and stay to watch the regular weekly play on television. There was always an interval during the play, for example The Potter's Wheel, The Playful Kitten, etc., when Doris would make the usual cup of tea. On this particular Sunday, Doris popped into the kitchen and I was sitting next to Mam, ready to have a little chat. Before I could say anything, however, within 30 seconds she was in trance, eyes closed, and Auntie was speaking to us. The sisters had such a close psychic rapport that it was as simple as that. She immediately told me that she was fully aware of our concern about the missing pound note and firstly assured us that none of our children was involved. I called Doris back from the kitchen and Aunt Egg then proceeded to tell us what had actually happened. Because of the strength of the psychic power in our house, spirit people could easily use it to move things around, as we had often noticed. Harmless fun by the spirit children, which we never discouraged and usually had a good laugh about. But on this occasion things were different. This time it was a young boy, recently passed over, who had not been averse to nicking the odd item when on the earth and his outlook had not had time to change since his passing. This is quite normal and poltergeists are an extreme example of this inability to understand their change of state, 97 from earthly to spirit beings. He had taken the note from Doris's purse with the intention of keeping it, but because of the protective psychic aura provided by our close spirit helpers, he found he could not take it out of the house and had therefore just left it. Aunt Egg then told us he had actually left it under the refrigerator in the kitchen, 97 probably thinking he was hiding it and would not be found out. I thanked Aunt Egg very much indeed and said I would immediately retrieve it. She said she would wait until we had actually recovered it and had been only too pleased to be able to help, 97 especially to clear the burns, as she called them. Sure enough, by raking under the 1-inch gap below the fridge with a long garden cane, the pound note came out, 97 along with much dust and fluff of course. And it was still folded in Doris's usual way. Aunt Egg then chuckled in her inimitable way, said cheerio, and within another 30 seconds Mother came out of her trance, when we were able to tell her what had happened. Just another example of the closeness of our spirit friends who are always amongst us and show their caring when it is needed. They are still part of our family and act in the same way that families do, 97 by helping whenever possible. But they do not interfere and run our lives for us, 97 that is always our own personal responsibility. We still had time for our cup of tea before the end of the 15-minute interval, and we were then able to tell Mam all about it. Remember, she knew nothing about the affair until we told her after Aunt Egg had gone, and she was just as pleased as we were to hear of the happy ending. The boundless universe. The sun is so large that it could contain more than 1 million worlds the size of our Earth. There are stars so large that they could easily contain 500 million suns. There are 100 billion stars in the average galaxy, with 100 million galaxies in known space. What then of the unknown? And ever near us though unseen, our dear immortal spirits dread, for all the boundless universe is life, 97 there are no dead. A letter, 97 40 years on during one of his occasional calls at my home in late 1988, I mentioned to one of my brothers-in-law, Tony Carr, that I was writing a book about our home circle. My notebook showed that he had been a guest at sitting number 97 on 28th of February 1948, when he was a rather skeptical young man in his early 20s. Tony now has a BA degree and has spent his working life in the scientific and technical fields allied to the motor industry. He is managing director of his own successful medium-sized company and is meticulous in his attention to detail. He recounted to me his still vivid memories of his visit to our circle and later wrote me a letter, from which I would now like to quote, 97 I hadn't realized, Tom, that you had kept a diary of your circle meetings and found it very interesting but also shattering that it was some 40 years ago. Some of the things I had forgotten, but there were two other factors not mentioned by you which I believe are worth recording. Firstly, 97 before it began Sid advised me to check the whole room to ensure that the only means of access was the door, that the window was closed and blacked out and could not be opened from the outside, and to make sure there were no trapdoors in the floor or ceiling. I can still remember him saying people will tell you there were ways of entry into the room. Oh, they will, you know. I must admit I was reluctant to do so, but I did it to satisfy Sid, and needless to say, once the door was closed there was no means of entry. Secondly, 97 the materialized form of my relative had quite a strong beard and he insisted that I pulled it hard to prove it was not false. Added and there was no way I could detach it from his face. It didn't occur to me at the time that my actions might have caused him some pain. 97 The vigor of my pull would certainly have caused you or I to yell out. But there was no reaction from him. But to me the most significant part of the evening was the trumpet movement prior to the commencement of the spirit voices. The members of the circle sat around the trumpet and relatively near to it. In such a small room it was impossible for anyone to move without some of the remaining members being aware of such movement. I vividly recall the trumpet slowly rising from the floor, the fluorescent paint on it gave a slight glow in the dark and therefore positioned it for us, and beginning to move around the circle. It moved up and down in front of each of us, going faster and faster but without ever touching either the floor or our feet. Then it would move up to the ceiling again, never ever touching it. There was no possible way that any sitter could move that physical object so rapidly and diversely in the dark. As you know, Tom, I have spent my working life in the scientific and technical fields, and this event remains as the one outstanding experience for which I cannot find, or even imagine, an explanation in physical terms. Wouldn't it be good if we could experience these things again, or at least share them even more fully with others? Yes, Tony, it certainly would be, 97, and I only hope this book will go some way along that road for the benefit of others. Looking forward, another poem found in my mother's papers after her passing in 1958, take the road that stretches out before you, walk in the dusk and know the end is bright. Take what comes and find the way to glory, much may go wrong, 97, but even more comes right. Face the day however hard before you and with the tears upon your cheeks still wet, learn to smile and keep on looking forward. Life is not done because the sun is set. At the end of my illustrated talks in the 1960s and 70s I always invited questions and comments from the audience. Lively discussions generally ensued and the idea of this book was born, but for various reasons the actual birth has been delayed. Unfortunately there can be no such open session at the end of a book, but I feel sure that for those seriously minded readers wishing to investigate further, there will always be someone or some reliable and helpful organization not too far away. Seek and ye shall find is as applicable as ever it was, and you could be pleasantly surprised by what might be in your own backyard. What was witnessed in our home circle was undeniable proof to those present, but it can never be proof to anyone else, 97, and I would never suggest it should be. For you it can be nothing more than evidence, 97, the strength of which is commensurate with the credibility of its source, as with the jury in a court of law. I trust I have impressed you as a genuine and honest witness, 97. I have no reason whatsoever to be otherwise, 97, but you must make the final judgment. Accept only what appeals to your reasoning and level of understanding, bearing in mind how our perception changes with increased knowledge. Scientists today are regularly disproving yesterday's facts. What is true today is so often replaced by another truth tomorrow. Keep an open mind at all times and be ready to seize your piece of personal proof when it presents itself, 97, quite likely from a most unexpected or unpredictable source. Be sure that you are ready for that propitious moment when it presents itself. But don't be expecting a world-shattering experience. It will most likely be a simple but very meaningful happening unique to yourself, 97, a moment of indefinable enlightenment, 97, an unforgettable moment to be forever treasured. Thank you sincerely for your company on this very brief sojourn down memory lane. Even though you may never have the thrill and privilege of meeting your spirit loved ones face to face, 97, very few ever do, 97, always remember that they are around and amongst us, ever ready to make their presence felt whenever the opportunity arises. It is an old maxim of mine that when you have excluded the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. The end.